Hello, everybody, and welcome to Eagle Eye View. I'm Jacob Noderman. There's no question that when it comes to the official podcast of Georgia Southern University, the notion of attending college will come up from time to time. I'm not here to shamelessly plug the university. However, enrollment is still open, and you can apply at georgiasouthern.edu. Going to college, for some, it wasn't really a question. For many, it's just the next natural step in a person's life. And for others, it's not a question, but for the other end of the spectrum. It is the week of First Generation College Students Day. Many families are seeing their first college students thanks to lowering those barriers of entry. With me today is someone who has seen it from almost every angle, and we're lucky to have him here to explain it all. He's the Associate Vice President for Inclusive Excellence and Chief Diversity Officer for Georgia Southern University, Dr. Dominique Quarles. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So I'm going to ask you this, and I'm going to ask it in the nicest way possible. What did you want to be when you grew up?
When I grew up, so what did I want to be? And so I had a surgery, and that a really cool person knocked me out and put me to sleep. And I thought it was the coolest thing. I had two surgeries growing up. One was a jaw surgery, and one was a surgery kind of on my hip area. I can't remember which one happened first, but but one of them happened around fifth grade. The other one happened around seventh grade. And for both of them, I had to be totally knocked out. And so me seeing an anesthesiologist happen, you know, multiple times. For both of those, I had to be knocked out. For the hip surgery, I think once, and for the jaw surgery twice, because they had to remove things, or either vice versa. But either way, both times I had to be under general anesthesia. And so both times I thought that person was really cool. And for one of the surgeries, the anesthesiologist was also the same person, the same woman who was the anesthesiologist for my mom when she had me. And she remembered her. And so that was also a really pleasant moment. So, yeah, I kind of nerded out about that role as a child.
Yeah. My goodness, it really is a small world, yeah. Even in the world of anesthesiology.
Yes, yes.
Let's talk a little bit more about you being a first-generation college student, or at least at the time. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about what that journey was like for you, because you said that for your entire life, you always wanted to pursue post-secondary education, mm-hmm. but historically in your family, that hadn't been the case. What was that switch for you to be that person?
Yeah, and so for me, you know, I think, as I mentioned, having a very close encounter, or having an encounter with someone who had a profession that I thought was really cool at a young age had high influence on that. As I mentioned, I just remember being very young and, you know, her telling me that you're going to fall asleep, and I'm asking when, and she's like, well, count from 10, and then I'm getting to 7 and I'm done. And and so for me as a little boy, that was like, wow, you know, magic basically. And so, so for me, that was a very interesting moment. I had never thought of it in a way of like, my parents don't have post-secondary education. How can I, so, yeah, it just was a piece of me that never really compared my journey with my parents' journey. I think I always assumed that kids are probably going to do a little better than what their parents did, or achieve things that may be a little grander than what their parents achieved. And so to me, it was never a them or me type piece. Yeah,
I got you. I don't mean to age you by any means, yeah. But around what year are we talking right now?
In terms of
first, like, get it, like your first year of college.
Oh, first year of college, 2007.
Okay, 2007. So talk to me a little bit about what it was like for your family going through those steps of mm-hmm. getting you enrolled in a university.
Yeah, so 2007. And so I went on multiple campus tours. I toured Georgia State. I toured Clayton State.
Never heard of them.
Yeah, no, never have I ever. Georgia State, Clayton State, Armstrong State, and Georgia Southern. And so I toured four schools, applied to four schools, and my deciding factor on Georgia Southern was that it was, and I would tell my parents this, close enough that I can always get home, far enough that they wouldn't jump in and you know, jump in on me.
That's a good balance.
So yeah, it was really good. And so really my deciding factor came between Georgia Southern and Armstrong. And some of my friends chose Armstrong, I chose Southern. We all went to a health science magnet high school, and it was a small, very small high school in Augusta, Georgia. And so my deciding factor was I wanted to be in a larger place. But some of my friends wanted to continue that small feel, and so they chose Armstrong. So I was back and forth between both campuses well before the consolidation. Yeah.
For many high school students who are thinking about going to college, you're thinking about the SAT, the ACT. You're thinking about finding out what the FAFSA is, getting all that paperwork in line. As for at least for your family, what were some of those things that you had to think about that maybe you hadn't thought about before and it might have come across as a surprise?
Yes. So I'll say for me, there's some, if I could take a step back, there's just some life lessons that I think my parents instilled in me in a very young age.
Okay.
Some of those being know it for yourself, another of those being get it in writing. So they're just very kind of process-based pieces that my parents kind of really instilled in me as a child. And so when it came time to apply for college, I mentioned that I went to a small magnet, health science and engineering magnet, high school in Augusta. So one, I had the support from the folks at A.R. Johnson, so I'll give them a quick shout out. At A.R. Johnson, I had great support.
Great people.
From teachers and counselors there. But also, I had parents that really stayed on me about, like, hey, they'll ask me questions, and if I don't know the answer, they'll say, go look it up. You know, and so those were kind of things that, even though they didn't necessarily know the answers, they knew that I should in that moment. And so that constant push from them. From my parents' perspective, me going to college or not was never an option. It was always, you're going to college.
Okay.
It was always ever present. And I know that's not necessarily representative of all first generation college students, but for me and my household, it definitely was. I think they knew that I had the potential to do it, and so I would do it. And I had been a pretty ambitious child wanting to be an anesthesiologist from grade 5. So anyway, but yeah, so those pieces kind of just meticulously really looking through the FAFSA information, working with the counselors, applying. I can over-obsess about things in moments, and I think knowing that it was about to be a new change in life of going away for the first time and being away from family, I really dove into a lot of my own questions about it, but also to answer questions from other folks in the community. So
now it's my understanding that you do a bit of mentoring for other students who are attending college or thinking about attending college. How has perhaps that story changed over time? Students who are first generation looking to go to college first in their family, what doors are you trying to open for them? Or even what kind of tips or advice, what do you try to tell these kids that someone hadn't told you, or maybe someone did tell you when you were in their spot?
So that's tricky because there are just multiple narratives of what it means to be first generation. And I'll give you an example. So, so for instance, for me, first generation college student, both of my parents went to high school and graduated successfully. Both of them went to what they would call a trade school and got trades. And what they didn't do was go to complete a 4-year bachelor degree, though both have attempted in their lifetimes in various, at various times. However, I have a very close friend of mine who, for her, she shared this, she shared this publicly, so I don't mind sharing as well. But for her, being a first generation college student means the first one in her family to graduate high school, you know. And so that's just a very different experience. Another example could be from families that may see going off to college as abandoning the family.
Really?
I didn't have that experience. My parents wanted me to go off and to go be independent. But for various reasons, families may feel like the student should stay and help the family stay, get a job, be able to contribute to life and the success of the family that may be more difficult to do if they're hundreds of miles away. And so there are just various ways to be first gen and various experiences people may have. And so for me, as an administrator on campus, but also as someone who I would like to consider myself to be a mentor for multiple students, is seeing what they need and what kind of coaching they need in that moment to make their first gen story a story of success.
Let's say that there's just a family or a student who cold calls you for the first time and just says, hey, I'm thinking about doing this, but I don't even know what to ask before we even get the ball rolling. What kind of advice do you give students in these situations navigating college life and just what those steps look like?
Yeah. Right now I'm working with I'm working with some students who are about to graduate and they're at the point of like, I'm about to graduate. I don't know what I'm going to do. Right. Which is,
that's just life.
Yeah, it's just life, right? It's life. But the same thing can be said for a high school student or someone who stopped out and is now pursuing a college as an adult. The same can be said for them, that this is a part of life that they're exploring. But what I urge folks to do is, what I've urged this young gentleman on campus to do is, I said, over the next week, can you commit to me that you would take 30 minutes of silence, a notepad, and your pen, and just write ideas? You can just write ideas of what you think you may want to do. Just write what you think you may be interested in. Just write what you think you may be talented at. You know, what do people call on you for just because they need your advice on something? Write those things down and then come back to me within the next week, and then we could talk through that. And I think for me, that's been very, very beneficial as well for the students, because they have time to truly, almost like an assignment, to sit down and just think. And I think when people do that, they're able to better arrive at, okay, you may not know the specific major, but you may know what we call in the academy kind of meta majors. You may know something that is, somewhat related to. It brings me back to your point about my biology then going into higher education. I had no idea. When I came to Georgia Southern, I told my advisor, I said, I do not know what I want to do. I said, but I went to a health science magnet school, and so I know I want to help people. And my current major is nursing, because I was on the nursing track there and I did nursing clinicals. And the advisor said, well, do you want to be a nurse? I said, no, I don't want to be a nurse. I just want to help people. And the advisor said, well, if you don't want to be a nurse, you need to get out of being a nursing major.
a very competitive thing to not want to do.
Yeah. And so I switched from that, and it kind of evolved to landing in biology, knowing that that would just qualify me for something that I may want to do that may be of help to people, right? And so I think you try to guide folks to, so what is that kind of meta, roundabout thing that you may be interested in? And maybe that's where you start. Maybe you start in a general or quote-unquote a pure science, and I hope academics don't get on me for that, but maybe you start in a general or kind of a pure science, and then you work your way into something more specified, you know?
Not only for the college experience is it just learning to file all the paperwork and learning how to live on your own, but it's also career development, and a lot of that is built on the back of building relationships with your professors and faculty, mm-hmm. and just perhaps even university administrators in mm-hmm. general. How do you encourage first-generation students to build those relationships with these key individuals?
It's very important. You know, I ask students to get involved in, you know, three things. One thing within their academic discipline, one thing they just have interest in, and one thing they just want to try out. So like some of your academic discipline, one thing you're passionate about, and one thing you just want to try. And I think you do those things and you're able to meet people in various parts of the campus, and hopefully some of those connections stick along the way. Yeah.
When you were going through college, what was that one thing that you wanted to try? What was that either strange elective that didn't make sense, or the hobby you picked up that maybe you just, it flamed out after a year because it wasn't your thing? What was the throw it at the wall, see what sticks?
The throw it at the wall, throw it at the wall, see what sticks.
I played rugby.
Yeah. I don't even know. You know, yes, I can tell you one thing that most people don't know about me that they would probably assume would not have been something I was passionate about, but actually was. And it was Divergent Dance Team. And so Divergent Dance Team is a dance team on campus. You know, if I weren't employed here, I would talk mad trash about how they are the best, but I won't do that because I support all the dance teams on campus. But yeah, so, you know, Divergent Dance Team was one of the involvements that I just did because I had passion about. It was, you know, it wasn't academic in nature. You know, it wasn't something I wanted to do for my career. It was just something that I just wanted to do for fun. And I found so much fun and so much community within DDT is what it's called, but within DDT. And it was just an amazing experience on campus. I still know some of those people to today. And so, yeah, that was great.
Very nice. Yeah. Now, you mentioned that you are an alum of Georgia Southern.
Yes.
You graduated, left, and then you came back to work for your alma mater. Before returning to Georgia, you were the assistant VP for Access, Diversity, and Inclusion for Mississippi State.
Yes.
You were a director of diversity and inclusion for the U of Georgia. Mm-hmm. When it comes to these other schools that you have worked at over the years, or even back to the first time you were on Georgia Southern's campus,
yes.
How has the first-generation student experience for Georgia Southern either changed over that time, or how is this experience unique to the other schools in the area?
The first generation experience, I can say, not necessarily based on those places, but over time. Over time, I think the first generation experience is now getting more attention than it ever has before.
Why is that?
Good question. Well, I have multiple answers on that. I have multiple answers on that. And so Well, one answer I'll say is I have to give credit where credit is due. First generation as an identity is birthed out of the federal TRIO programs. The federal TRIO programs legislation that funded the federal TRIO programs is where you see first generation college student kind of peeking into American society mostly in the 60s. And so that is where the birth of first generation programming started. Those programs are still here on campus. We have a federal TRIO program, Student Support Services, on the Armstrong campus.
Great
and
people.
And we have the Ronald McNair program on the Statesboro campus. And that's where you see a lot of the life come out of these programs. What I'll say is, I think now what we're finding is that the population of first generation college students who are on college campuses is increasing. And colleges, in terms of enrollment, colleges are having to be more competitive for students in terms of their enrollment because birth rates have gone down. And so I think what you're technically seeing is a form of interest convergence to a certain extent in which you have colleges trying to figure out how can they recruit more students, but those more students are now also first generation college students. And so yes, you have to also support those students so they're successful at your institution as well.
I'm here with Dr. Dominique Quarles, the Associate VP for Inclusive Excellence at Georgia Southern University. Dr. Quarles, is there some kind of stigma about first generation college students? Mm-hmm. And if so, what is it and what is being done to overcome it?
Yes, and I also will say this, and I say this in a positive way as I can, but we try to be constructive here. But yeah, so there can be stigma around being a first generation college student. Generally, that stigma. I've only worked in state schools, right, and so often there are many first generation college students at a state school. And so I haven't worked at a place where that stigma has been very strong.
Okay.
But because that stigma hasn't been extremely strong, I think that does make it a little easier to prop up first generation college student programs in places where it may be a little more difficult to prop up programs that may have a different type of stigma or that may move people in different ways. And so I do know that some students experience a stigma with being the first in their family to go off to college. I think that has so many intersections with other identities, though, that I don't think it's often solely the first generation piece. I think it's embedded with other identities they may hold as well. I hate to talk in very flowery language, but that's the response to the question. I think it can have a stigma. I think there's been a lot of work to try to overturn that stigma. People have done a lot to make the first generation experience a more empowering experience. And less about what you don't have, more about what you can do and who you can be and what your family can achieve.
And I think it's okay to be a bit, I mean, I don't want to use the word flowery, but mm-hmm. in a field where there are so many factors and individual stories and mm-hmm. motivations, mm-hmm. you almost have to speak broadly and paint with a broad brush.
Yes.
Just so that you can find some kind of pattern to make mm-hmm. it all make sense.
Absolutely. Blue Ivy, who is the daughter of Jay-Z and Beyonce, recently, she bidded on an $80,000 piece of something, right? Blue Ivy, if she goes to college, will be a first generation college student. Beyonce didn't go to college. Jay-Z didn't go to college. She will have parents who are collectively billionaires and be a first generation college student. Now, of course, that's an extreme example, right? So you have a lot of overlap with folks who come from homes, you have a lot of overlap from folks who come from homes that aren't as financially well off who are also first generation college students. And you have folks whose parents decided to go into the business sector early on, never went to college, skipped that step, and who are also successful. And they too are first generation college students. What you see the heaviest impact on is when you overlap first generation and students from low-income backgrounds, and that is the population that you often see changes in curriculum impacting the most. And so when you overlap both being first gen and also coming from a low-income background, those are the students that I think that you often want to, as an institution, try to make sure that you're supporting.
We've been talking a lot about what you're doing as a mentor and mm-hmm. your role on the university in these capacities. We also mentioned the federal TRIO programs as well as a few other resources. The point that I'm trying to bring up is that Georgia Southern and many other universities, there are a plethora of resources to help any kind of student get to where it is they're trying to accomplish in their post-secondary education career. How have how have these resources or even these motivations for universities changed over time? And I'd like to specifically focus on your alma mater and my employer, Georgia Southern.
Yes, and so I think that the resources have expanded. I think we have included first-generation college students kind of in the dialogue around diversity, equity, and inclusion in ways that I don't think it was included as much, you know, a decade or two ago. I think that, you know, access to programs to support first-generation college students, they've expanded beyond, as I've mentioned earlier, the foundational programs being the TRIO programs. So, yeah. So now you see Georgia Southern and other institutions, but now you see them embedding aspects of academic support across campuses in ways that they haven't, you know, in the past. Or you see things like our, you know, our academic success centers, so what it's called here, but you see models of that same type of programming in which, you know, now you may have professional staff members who are really trying to dive into seeing which populations may need the most support in what moments in the semester and being able to serve those populations in a more acute and directed way. And so I think those type of pieces, you know, they help out the student, of course. They help the students be successful. They help them be retained at the institution. But I think those type of elements that have been added to programs over the years is kind of what you'll see as new pieces that are helping out first-generation college students.
Dr. Quarles, thank you so much for taking some time on Eagle Eye View today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And thank you all for listening. Be sure to tune in the next 2 weeks for another exciting edition of Eagle Eye View. You can listen to all of our previous episodes on our website at georgiasouthern.edu, or you can find us on Spotify and all your other major podcast platforms. For Eagle Eye View, I'm Jacob Noderman. Catch you next time.